The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday. Is it still Thursday or Friday yet? Is it Friday?
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Holiday coming.
Yes. The holiday is Monday.
Holiday weekend.
Yes. Not the day is the 10th.
Yeah. You know how you know a holiday coming?
How you know
holiday it raining.
Okay.
You notice it rain every holiday weekend for the last 17 years?
No.
Possibly 25. I've been counting, Yuri.
I tend to not to even know.
The only day I get off is public holiday, and it rain every public holiday?
I don't even know the days of the week no more because of how I work. I just come, show up.
Don't touch my megaphone.
No, don't leave that.
You going through andropause?
What's andropause?
That's male version of menopause. This only for people going through the pause.
I have diabetes.
Well, you need one of these in case your sugar go up and you go down. So yeah. You could say, back up, yeah. Back up. I need backup.
I never thought that there would be a need for me to go to the restroom every 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thought that? I was active.
Older men. There's something, hey?
Am I old?
All of those, I didn't say old. I say older men could have told you to be prepared because it could happen. It is.
Older men mentorship.
They're busy waiting on the line for the one porta potty at the shack.
Yes. But let's cut all of that. Today we have a distinguished guest, Dr. Grace Turner, in studio. Right? When we have royalty, historian type royalty, we calm down, we get sober in our speech, and then we evoke Bahamians to listen as we learn about the Bahamas, right? Learn about we self, right? I'm going to have Dr. Grace Turner give her credentials. Not that I do not know it, right? I want a listening audience to appreciate her for who she is, because our topic tends to range from here to there, and she goes in detail about the Bahamas. She's one of the premier historians. I think she should, when people look at study people in the past, anthropologist, we got to ask her that too, her exact thesis discipline. Let me stop.
No, man.
Welcome, Dr. Grace.
Don't stop. This is good, man.
Dr. Grace Turner, you go with all your academics and conclude. Give like a brief summary of you. So, Bahamian audience can appreciate you and herald you because you're here. Okay, thanks very much. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. Thank you and good morning. And thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here. So, in my academic and professional background, I started out in history and I transitioned after the history into sociocultural anthropology. Anthropologists study people. The sociocultural ones would pretty much study living people. And I did that, and I came home and did a brief stint in teaching because I had a government scholarship and had to serve out my time in teaching. That was invaluable training as well. But when I left the Department of Archives and transitioned there into archaeology, in the United States, in North America, archaeologists are also considered anthropologists, but they're the ones who specialize in studying people of the past. And so I would describe myself now as an anthropological historian.
And I appreciate that. And I invited you for a specific reason, but I want to deviate before we get to the actual talk. We're talking about honors and honoring Pompeii. That's the theme for the day. But going with her theme of her education and expertise, right? The Bahamas has been changing over the years, right? One set of people to the next set of people. That's why I'm going to mention immigrants here, right? There's a number of people who are terrified. See how you use the word? They are terrified that the Bahamas is going to be a different place in the next 10, 20 years. You, whose profession is to study the changing of people, the way how, or the history of the peoples of the Bahamas, right? When people mention that they are concerned that our lifestyle is changing, our history is changing, our people is changing, our culture is changing, is that something to be afraid of, one? Is that something to say, yes, it is true, we are definitely changing? And have you seen theme to say, yes, we're changing, and this is how we're going to adapt? But I'd leave you to speak for a good 10 minutes on that, in terms of people scared, and should we be scared, or this is part of life?
It's a part of life. When I transitioned to study sociocultural anthropology, my time, and I didn't realize it then, but she was an icon for African Americans, Dr. Vera Green. And one of the things she said to me that impacted me intensely was that change is constant. The one thing in life that is constant is change. And you need to understand and appreciate how to manage the change, because it can be very scary. And I recognize and I see that people are very afraid now. They're very scared. But I'll tell you a story, because people in the past have had similar fears. So I just had some research to relocate a document that I had initially been shown like 30 years ago. And I remember the document because I recognize my great-grandfather's name on that document. His name was Claudius Minnis. That's not a very common name. I had to go and ask my grandmother at the time if her father was ever involved in the sponging industry, because I saw his name on a petition of local boat owners and sponge since 1888. This petition was to the governor, begging the governor at the time to please stop the foreigners who were coming in and getting involved in the sponging industry. And you know who those foreigners were?
The Greeks?
Yeah. And the governor was reporting that a group of 25 Greek sponge fishermen had recently come to the Bahamas, and these local business people, and they included a range of people. That caused me to know that the sponging industry, there of course were the big wealthy business people, but there were smaller operators like my great-grandfather and a number of other people in there. The governor in his report back to England was saying, he pretty much said that he thought the locals were overreacting and he felt that competition would do them well. Well, our sponging industry lasted for at least another 50 years after that. But when I spoke with my grandmother, who would have been born in 1904, she said by the time she was born, her father had had to sell his 3 sponge boats and go into something else, because there was competition. And what the competition did was that for small sponge operators like he was, they couldn't compete. They didn't have the money and the resources. So yes, when you have change coming, there can be some negative impacts in there. And especially if you're in a group who feels as if you're being impacted negatively, it can be extremely scary. But change is a constant. And now today, the Greek Bahamian, well-established part of our community, and that aspect of their history is not well known or understood. But when they were coming in, they were not easily and readily accepted. And it's a similar kind of thing that we're facing today. But it's how you manage and how you deal with that change.
At one point in time in our history, we had a movement of Caribbean people, right? Was there any tension when the Caribbean people said, man, be part of the West Indies, be a part of the British West Indies. We supposed to come here. This our country, not just your old country. What type of tension was happening there?
Okay, so again, this is late 1800s, more into the 1890s. So by the early 1890s, the British military had pulled out because the soldiers, they were black. Most of them were not Bahamian. They were from elsewhere in the Caribbean, African. Quite often they married Bahamian women and would have settled here. The police force was revitalized and reestablished, and the British colonial officials made a conscious decision, because some of the tensions that were in our society at the time was between the very wealthy and the not so wealthy, and generally that difference was a color. And there were quite often tensions between, racial tensions between the groups. And there was a concern among these British officials that if they recruited policemen predominantly from the local community, if tensions like that arose, they were seriously concerned that the black policemen would sympathize with the local black community and not help us rigorously. So the decision was made to recruit black police officers, but from elsewhere in the Caribbean. And the earliest ones came predominantly from Barbados. And one of the first riots we had in the Bahamas was the local men against these, who they perceived as foreign policemen, because as policemen, they had a very regular salary. That salary allowed them to have a very middle-class lifestyle at a time when most black Bahamian men living over the hill didn't have a very comfortable lifestyle. And so there was competition for women, and these Barbadian men were winning out too often. And it boiled up to a point where a breakdown in Baytown.
Okay. I'm going towards Pompey, and I'm continuing to a theme of riots and petitioning. I remember there was a hanging of some Duvalier brothers or some sort about a riot on, like there was, this is early 1900s or early, late 1800s. And I'm not sure the story about why these Duvalier brothers were punished. But back to protests and the Bahamas and the psyche. Do you know about that story? Because I might have just pulled out my hat and then all of a sudden you don't remember anything about what I talk about.
I have heard of it, but I would need to go search of the details.
So, we have had a number of history of Bahamians fighting for freedom, justice, right? You mentioned there was tensions, and I mentioned earlier that we now have tensions about a lot of immigrants here into the Bahamas now. As an anthropologist, you study the change of people over the years inside the Bahamas, and a number of Bahamians are afraid that there'll be a riot in the future. I mean, like I said, they deathly afraid there'll be a riot in the future. How did the government at that time overcome such? And what would you recommend or should we be doing right now to avoid such? Or is there really any afraid, real fear a riot or anything will be happening in the future? I know it's a complicated question.
Yeah. Well, so in dealing with an issue like that, because the whole issue over immigration, from how I understand it, really isn't against itself or any immigrants. It's being triggered and being driven by undocumented immigration. Mm. And from what I am understanding, to a lot of Bahamians, it seems as if this undocumented flow of immigrants is pretty much out of control. And that is contributing to a lot of the fear, because people feel as if they are losing control of their own country. You hear that in their responses, like, oh, they come in and they come to take over. And you have to stop and analyze it, like, break it down. Like, are they really taking over? What is really happening? Mm. And so, again, it isn't an easy issue to deal with or an easy matter to resolve. But when you look at it and you understand it as when you filter out, how are we dealing with undocumented immigration? What is the impact of undocumented immigration? What kinds of resolutions can we look at to deal with that? That those are some of the starting places, but these are all very sensitive and very deep issues that so this is my personal opinion. Quite often, they require of government political action, but quite often, different governments would prefer to transition that so that it's dealt with further down the road. And in the meantime, the community, the locals outside who do not have the authority to make those necessary changes, they go into a panic. Mm. And if you don't manage those two competing things, you have a tinderbox. The slightest little thing can trigger something. And yeah, we have been at this point before. Like I told you, you can point to cases in the past, but we are approaching another one of those cases, those mm-hmm. situations where the tension is so real, and people operate on their perceptions. You know, they say your perception is your reality. It may not be factual reality, but in your world, it is, and you're going to act on that. And if you are already feeling tense, you are feeling as if you control. You are seeing this overwhelming situation that you feel is not being dealt with adequately. If in your mind you come up with what you feel is a good solution for you, we're looking at some serious trouble.
We're talking to Dr. Turner, who is a consultant at Antiquities Monuments
and Museum.
And Museum Corporation of Bahamas. This is the second time that your organization has nominated an African to be a national hero. Before, we had Kate. I'm going to add a last name to her because people just assume. Kate Moss, an African living in
Great Hope Plantation near on Crooked Island.
Crooked Island.
Yeah, it's near a settlement. I'm blanking on the name.
A number of behemoths have been lobbying her to be recognized as a national hero. I think she's now, Aaron, how many national heroes do we have now? Five?
She was the last one to be honored?
Yes.
So I think it's either six or seven, eh?
Six or seven, thereabouts, right? And now we're about to have one more. But I want to talk about Kate. Why was Kate chosen? Even though it's been lobbied for a while, why was Kate Moss chosen to be a national hero? And from there, I want to move on to why is Pompey being chosen as a national hero? And I want to go through the mechanism on how do you recommend, because we've had a number of Africans, early Bahamians, who have done some extraordinary things that is worth recognition. And we're not doing a stellar job of recognizing them. And your organization has recognized two, brought two from the past, bring them to the forefront, and given them a narrative of, see, just us. This us at our sublime, who deserve recognition and honor. Let's talk about Kate, and then we can talk about why we chose Pompey.
Okay, so Kate would have been immortalized about 1828. Kate Moss lived at the Great Hope Plantation. Yeah, the remains of that plantation is just southwest of Landrail Point in Crooked Island. But her owners at the time were Henry and Helen Moss. Henry and Helen Moss were the largest slave owners in the Bahamas at the time. They had more than 800 slaves who would have been assigned on different islands. But the Mosses lived at Great Hope Plantation, and Kate was originally assigned to work around the kitchen. She plaited baskets, all the baskets that we sell to tourists as souvenirs now. All of them were originally utilitarian baskets you used around the plantation, and Kate's work was to do some of them. Kate would have been about 14 or 15 years old. And being a regular teenager, sometimes she would be a little slack in her work. Her owners were upset at her. She wasn't meeting her quota. And to punish her, they put her in the stocks in a storage building near the main house. And they ended up keeping her in the stocks for 2 weeks. And being in the stocks, her legs would be clamped down in these wooden frames. She was sitting on the ground. But even though she was restrained, they still wanted her to continue working. And so they would rub ice to keep her from falling asleep. Because she was being punished, they fed her only bread and water. And then in the two-week period, at least 6 or 7 times, she was whipped. And she was usually whipped by an adult man. And you remember, Kate was a teenage girl. So very small frame, very different. And before this, she had worked in and around the kitchen. That was the easier work. When her punishment time was finished, instead of sending her back into the kitchen area, she was then assigned to work out in the fields. That was understood to be much more difficult, harder work if you were assigned to the fields. Because the gang who would have gone out to the fields, they would have gone out there before daybreak. Because it's cooler, they would have had a brief time period to have lunch near midday, and near the end of the day, they would come back. Kate, after being restrained for 2 weeks, whipped constantly, being fed bread and water, she was sent to the fields where she hadn't worked before. So within hours, Kate was dead. And this is the late 1820s. By that time, laws had changed. Plantation owners could not simply punish any of their slaves to the point that they died from that punishment. And because of the status of her owners, their case went before the governor. And the governor at the time was the same governor who dealt with Pompey, Sir James Carmichael Smith. He was known and understood to be pro-abolitionist. So the wealthy white people did not like him. He convicted the owners of Kate of manslaughter, not the heavier charge of murder. But that was huge, that these were the wealthiest people in the country and you convicting them for killing a black girl. The attitude was like, but shit, that only a slave. But he convicted them, so they were in the prison that's now the public library, and they also had to pay a fine. These were wealthy people, so the couple of shillings they had to pay was a drop in the bucket, but it was the symbolism of him having the unmitigated gall to do that to such high-status people. But the details of her case had to be sent to England. And I mentioned Governor Carmichael Smith was pro-abolition. Back in England, in Britain, there was a social movement that was lobbying to try and get the British Parliament to eventually end slavery. This movement had gotten the Parliament to agree to improve laws for the treatment of slaves. And so they were trying all they could to promote that cause. When the transcript of that case was sent to England, a copy of the transcript was sent to the London Abolition Society, and they published it as a pamphlet, and they named the pamphlet Poor Black Kate, because they used that pamphlet as a public education tool to inform the British public about the cruelties of slavery in the West Indies, because the average British person, just like today, they may have heard about the West Indies. They knew about the wealth that could come out there, but they had no clue about what day-to-day life was like for an enslaved person there. So Kate's case, the harshness of it, brought a sharp reality to a British public that was going along willy-nilly.
So being selected to be a national hero. And that's why I want to go to Pompey and his award for this coming National Heroes Day. How are they selected and what is the process?
Okay, so Kate was selected because Kate's case came up before Pompey's case. Kate died in 1828. So because she was earlier, and this was a time of high tension because of the activity of the abolitionist movement in London, news was going around that slavery might soon end in the British Empire. And black people were hearing that, enslaved black people were hearing that. So there were tensions around. This was a time like that. And the Bahamas, we have to be careful when we hear people say, oh, slavery wasn't as bad as... But you want to be enslaved? As a slave, you have no rights. Your punishment, you have no control over it. And so Kate's case was evidence that even though your day-to-day average work for the regular slave may not have been as harsh as it was in some other places, it still was harsh. It was not an easy road. So Kate was an earlier one in this move toward emancipation. Pompey comes up, and Pompey's case draws out even longer than Kate's. And Pompey becomes recognized. That's why the museum was named after him. Pompey was not executed. Not all slaves being charged with rising up against their owner lived to tell the story. So Lord Rolle, he had inherited these five estates in Great Exuma from his father. And Pompey lived at Steventon. There was Ramses and Mount Thompson. Lord Rolle figured he wasn't making enough money. Plantations in the Bahamas were not making money by the 1820s. And he wanted them moved. You had to apply to the government for permission to move your slaves because there was a lot of shady business happening. He wanted them taken to Trinidad, but that request was denied. Lord Rolle nor his father ever lived here. Lord Rolle had a lawyer and a business agent who lived in Nassau. And he was politically well-connected. He was on the governor's executive council. The executive council back then would be equivalent to the cabinet today. His agent came up with the idea that since you can't move them to Trinidad, let's move them to some different islands around in the Bahamas. And the first proposal was like 1829 to move some to Grand Bahama. They sent a contingent of West India Regiment soldiers, their black soldiers, down there. But they gave these people, they gave them a little more than a week, more like 2 weeks to gather up their crops because slaves, enslaved people, the owners would allow them plots of land to grow food to support themselves. And some of them, because you could sell the extra to other people, so you could potentially have some little money. So some of them would have like chickens and hogs. But if you're moving, you need to be able to harvest your crops, decide what you're going to do with the creatures you have. And that wasn't enough time. These protests, they managed to drag off 20 of them and take them to Grand Bahama. And they waited a bit. Then the agent came up with another idea that maybe we should take them to Cat Island. At that time, they used to call it St. Salvador. One of the hitches, though, was that if you were moving them to another island, you were supposed to own property on that island, and they go into your property. But Lord Rolle did not own any property on that island. But the agent came up with a deal. He made a deal with a plantation owner down there where the slaves would be settled on his land and they would essentially work for him and they would pay him a fee. Another one of the planters ratted him out to the governor, but they knew the trouble they had the first time they went. So this time they figured they would be a bit more prepared. Number one, they gave them less time. They gave them about a week or a little more than a week. And the governor, they had to get the governor's permission because the governor had to authorize the soldiers down there. And they were reporting to the governor that they had word that these slaves were armed. But one of the reports said, yes, the slaves did have guns because Exuma is near Nassau, but near New Providence, but not exactly close. This is the early 1800s. There were a lot of wars around. There's Haiti nearby, Santo Domingo. Ships could pass by and attack you. No telephone then. The boats ain't fast enough. So this was an attempt that in the event that there was any threat, these slaves could defend themselves, defend Lord Rhodes' property, because for those five plantations, there was just one overseer. So essentially, these slaves were living on their own and had been for some years. Well, it did not go over well with them that they had so little time to dispose of their stuff before they had to leave. And they protested, and a group of 44 of them went into the bush. And they stayed in the bush for a little more than a month, like 5-6 weeks, when they ran out of food. And some decided to go back to the plantation. But the 44, including Pompey, led by Pompey, decided they were coming to Nassau.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break right now. We're talking to Dr. Turner. Coming up this month, the government is going to be recognized Pompey. Does Pompey have a surname?
He would be considered Pompey Rule.
Pompey Rule. They're going to be honoring him posthumously. I pronounce it right? Right?
Posthumously.
Posthumously. It's going to be a big thing, a big celebration. He's going to be like the sixth or the seventh national hero of the Bahamas for his contribution of a national dialogue or a national narrative of who we are as a people. We're also going to include some more stories about to be considered heroes, but we'll do that on the next side of the break. We'll be right back.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Bigger, longer, wider. Saturdays are getting supersized on Guardian Radio. Following the always heavy hitting, the eye-opener at 9 a.m. Stay tuned for the full size, the accredited from 10th year seniors at 11 a.m. Now for a full 2 hours. Then Tell to Stanya at 1 p.m. is now even longer at 90 minutes. The big, all-new season of Our Blue Bahamas from Breathe is now at 2:30 p.m. And the happy hour with Deandra Cartwright is smiling wide at its new time, 3 p.m. It's the new big Guardian Radio Saturdays on 96.9 FM or GuardianTalkRadio.com.
Oh, yeah.
Are you searching for something new? Something exciting? Your dream job in paradise? Well, look no further. Royal Beach Club Paradise Island is hiring. Join a dynamic group of passionate hospitality professionals, craft unforgettable moments, and thrive in a vibrant, welcoming atmosphere. Play your part in shaping the future of our team while growing every day. Bring your energy, your passion, and your creativity to a workplace that's as dynamic and fun as you are. At Royal Beach Club Paradise Island, the opportunities don't just exist. They're limitless. So are you ready to find your perfect fit? Visit Royal Beach Club at paradiseisland.com/career today and step into a world of exciting possibilities.
This October, let's come together for hope, support and strength.
It's the Sister Sister Breast Cancer Support Group Dollar Day, happening Friday, October 17th from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. right on the Nassau Guardian grounds, Carter Street.
And the best part? With just $1, you can help make a difference in the fight against breast cancer. Every dollar counts toward awareness, education, and support for women battling this disease.
Come out, drop a dollar, and stand with us for a cause that touches so many lives.
Join us on Friday, October 17th from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. and let's turn every dollar into hope.
That's the Sister Sister Breast Cancer Dollar Day, proudly sponsored by the Guardian Media Group, Star 106.5, and the Guardian Radio 96.9.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Don't wait for a storm to arrive. Stock up on hurricane supplies, make home repairs, purchase a generator, and more this hurricane season with a Fidelity personal loan. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, we're talking to Dr. Turner, who's given a narrative about Pompeii. I had a narrative about Kate earlier. Pompeii is being recognized posthumously.
Posthumously.
I love how you pronounce that, right? In fact, Dawn Cornish, who is the chairman of director of AMMC, is actually receiving a reward, coming up on the celebrations. I'm kind of excited about that in recognition of Pompeii and quote role. But I want to have a narrative about protesting. Recently, we had a protest downtown Bay Street. Coming up, we're having a LBG march, and there's going to be a church protest, Aaron. And some religious groups have made application to also be on that route. And I'm saying, well, my concept is, why have two opposing forces on the same route? Nothing wrong with opposing, nothing wrong with protesting, but why have two opposing forces on the same route?
Well, here's what we know. It's unlikely that the Royal Bahamas Police Force would authorize two opposing groups to occupy the same space at the same time. Given the nature of the opposition and the issues on the table, it's unlikely that the authorities would permit that, allow that to happen. In July 2004, the Rosie O'Donnell Cruz protest, the Rainbow Alliance held a demonstration on the northwest corner of Rawson Square, right? And the police let us know right away, say, listen, we just need you to know we've authorized your presence, but because of the security risks involved, understand that if we have to shut it down, we will shut it down at a moment's notice, right? And so the police are very sensitive. They don't want to silence anybody, but the utmost consideration is public safety, right? And so it's unlikely the police would authorize the two occupy the same space. And since we're talking about homosexuality, it's unlikely that'll happen. And I'm not sure if the university would permit two opposing organizations to occupy even similar proximity, right? Because of what happened last year at the lecture at the College of the Bahamas. So if I could read from the article just very, very quickly, right? Because when I spoke about it, I said I didn't know exactly who the group was. But if it was our brothers Israel United in Christ, we know that there's a disciplined group of brethren. We call them that, of brothers. And I rely on that being paramount, them holding themselves to their principles. So here we go. Church group to protest over Pride Week March. Tensions are mounting ahead of tomorrow's Pride Week March as a church group plans a counter-protest on the same day at the University of the Bahamas, raising fears of confrontation. The, quote, human rights march, close quotes, organized by members of the LGBTQ community and allied groups, is scheduled as a part of Pride Week activities. Organizers say the event is about equality and visibility, not sexual expression. But Churches United in Christ, that's the new designation, Churches United in Christ, led by prophetess Pastor Dr. Patrice Smith, says it will also protest that day to, quote, stand up for what the Bible says, close quote. So let me just say, a march is not a protest. It's just a demonstration of visibility. Quote, I am not bashing anybody, close quote, she said. Quote, I just feel like the world needs to know the truth. It's time for the church to come out of the four walls. We've been silent too long. We've allowed so many things to pass, and now it's in our face. And so as the church, we have to stand up, we have to say something, we have to be present, close quotes. Her comments reflect the continued rift in the Bahamas where expressions of LGBTQ visibility often trigger strong pushback from others. I just want to stick a pin there and say, I'm not quite sure what they are protesting. Because one thing we know, gay people are not silencing them, right? We could barely afford Chip. Talk about silencing them. The second thing we know is that Dr. Prophetess Patrice occupies a quite large space in the public. She's a regular contributor on Beyond the Headlines. So any suggestion that the church's voice is being silenced or her voice in particular is being silenced is rooted in possibly a misunderstanding of what's actually happening. Right, I'm not even going to suggest that she lying. I think that she, where she is located, she may feel oppressed, but that's because she doesn't necessarily understand, doesn't have good spatial awareness, and realize that nobody in this country is shutting down the community. And Delton Fernandez's comments, which she initially opposed, right? Like when they came out, she didn't even come out kind on radio, on television, mad at the gay. She's mad at the Christian Council for not taking a stronger stance. But it's important to understand that when Delton Fernandez said, we're not going to interfere with this year's Pride activities, it's possible that he was referencing the fact that the behavior that they engaged in at last year's Pride activities could be defined as interfering, especially since the Chargé d'Affaires security team made the decision to remove them from the event early, and UB security staff made the decision to escort panelists out of the building. So okay. Just give it a frame of reference. Of course, they have the right to express their opinion, but I don't think anybody's silencing anybody.
Okay. So we're going back to Dr. Turner in terms of our history of protesting, right? Kate protested by being defiant. Mm-hmm. Pompey protested by saying, I have rights. Mm-hmm. I go into court and I'm going to fight it in the court because we have honored Kate, right? We're now honoring Pompey. How can you explain the process of how do we honor those people? Okay. Like, what happens?
Well, someone, and it's not from our organization, some private individual who feels passionate enough about they would write a justification. They would write a justification for their nomination and present it to the Office of the Governor General. And if it's accepted, they are notified. And that has been the process for both Kate and for Pompey, because quite often they would send us the historical information to verify or expand on. And once they're accepted, then the awards go out, and the Antiquities Corporation is wanting to use this opportunity to enhance Bahamians' understanding of who Pompey was, his whole role, because in the whole process of them coming to Nassau, well, of course, this boat full of black people coming in by themselves, the agent was against them. They didn't realize that then, but the agent asked for them to be arrested and tried, but he made sure the trial happened quickly because the trial should have, the governor should have been notified, and the governor wasn't. They were charged with stealing Lord Rolls' boat. And like I said to someone, how else do you expect to get from Exuma to Nassau? They didn't steal the boat. They made that boat. They used that. And to them, we come into Nassau, you need the boat. But that was the charge against them, and they being runaways. And they were found guilty of those charges. And their sentence, Pompey and four other men, five men out of the 44 who were understood to be leaders, were to get 50 lashes of the whip in the marketplace. The marketplace in 1830 was Vendue House, where Pompey Museum is now. So Pompey knows that place. The women, there were eight women, and they called him a man boy, a teenage boy. They all got 39 lashes of the whip. They were held at the jail that's now the Nassau Public Library. But the governor was furious when he learned about it because one of the women was pregnant and two were nursing mothers. And at that point in time, pregnant women and nursing mothers were not supposed to be whipped. And the governor was also angry that, because he realized they were doing this behind his back. So he suspended the agent from the governor's council. He fired the police magistrate. He fired all the magistrates who were involved in it. And there was a whole big thing. But he allowed Pompey and the other slaves to return to Exuma, because usually, if you were tried and found guilty of being a runaway, any of those charges, if you were not executed, you were at least sold someplace else. And so once they returned to Exuma, they were recognized from 1830 as heroes, because at least they were still alive. And by the end of the 1800s in Bahamian courts, because Lord Rollo or his descendants ever came to the Bahamas, Bahamian courts recognized the rights of these descendants of former slaves to legally own the land that once belonged to Lord Rolls. So now all of those five areas are now held as commonages for the descendants of those Rolls slaves.
Let's do some rapid questions. On the fort, West Bay Street, the cannons.
The water battery.
The water battery. What's happening with that?
They are to be refurbished. There was some behind-the-scenes work because one of them, the traversing carriage, the big metal carriage that would allow them to shift, that was broken. That has to be repaired. The cannons themselves are to be sanded down, a primer put on and painted.
Is there any timeline for that?
Hopefully before the end of this year.
You'll need volunteers?
At this point, I don't know yet. We have some commercial donors who are funding this refurbishment. There's someone who deals with welding and the heavy welding work, because a crane needs to lift them back and forth and all of that.
So at this present time, the battery, the cannon, it's still there on the site?
Yes.
What about Columbus statue? Where is that?
The main part of the statue should be on the grounds of the Ministry of Works. The remnants of his right arm and leg are at the headquarters of the Antiquities Corporation, but his sword is missing.
The Awak boons, where is that?
They in my office.
In your office?
Mm-hmm.
Where's your office, and do you leave the door open?
No.
You know that's coming. Make it. Go. I was going to go bury it. You know that's going to bury your bones.
I mean, I'd volunteer in as well, because I'm about to hit perimenopause. You don't need a crane. I could lift that battery. You get me angry enough, I could lift that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Turner. I just would need to know when you're not in your office. No? And it ring on your desk, right?
They well trained. They well trained. Yeah, they well trained.
Pass by and say, I brought you lunch.
No.
Take them bones and bury it. No. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Dr. Turner. Thank you very much, Aaron Green. When is the date of receiving the award for
Monday
Pompey?
Monday afternoon.
Where are we gathering? Where are we gathering?
At Bahama.
Any free food?
Probably.
They have seats in the parking lot?
probably.
Is it open to the public?
No, the ceremony is invitation only.
Can I be your guest?
I was given 3 invites.
Like, so you already get them out?
Yeah.
What if I tell you King Charles is my cousin and Richard III is my uncle?
There you go. She's royalty.
You got specialty?
There you go.
I can bring my own chair.
There you go. God in your AM. Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian 6.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.